Blog Talk Radio.
Here. Aww. Well, actually, that's kind of not true because there is a Republican debate next week. Just so happens that's also the week of my vacation. But what, did you think I was going to let you go watch a Republican debate without me responding to it? The fuck out of here. There will be segments posted or videos posted about the Republican debate, responding to it, stuff like that. So fear not, although I'm not here next week, you're going to miss me or anything. I'll be around. Also, it's not like nothing's going to upload on the YouTube channel. I spent all yesterday preparing stuff that will upload onto the YouTube channel when I'm gone. And then on top of that, although I'm on vacation, I will be appearing on various shows towards the end part of the week, next week when I'm off. But obviously this week I'm here, so we got 4 days. I'm going to jam-pack the shows full of entertaining and interesting stuff. And like I said, fear not, because even when I'm gone, you're going to have a bunch of stuff to watch on the YouTube channel. So, and I'm really not even all that gone, because like I said, I'll respond to the Republican debate, and you know how it goes. I'll be on other shows, yada, yada. All right, so that's just a quick update for those of you who don't know that. Now, let me tell you what we have to look forward to today. We're going to have a lot of fun. We got Hillary Clinton really, really embarrassing herself, Real Clear Politics has a funny article about this, about how like she's trying to generate that kind of Bernie Sanders excitement, and it's just like, wah, 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 wah. She literally hears that every time she's about to give a speech. She goes to talk and is like, wah, 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 wah. ISIS, unfortunately, is having more success and getting more gains, and basically the international community is failing at the one fucking thing which I said they have to do at all costs. So that's pathetic. Dick Cheney gets destroyed on Fox News of all places. And the day has come, ladies and gentlemen. The day has come. I will be responding to Conservapedia after they made an ass of themselves responding to me. They should have just tucked their tail in between their legs and walked away, man. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking. I mean, well, they don't think. We know that, clearly. They made the site Conservapedia. But it's ugly. Shouldn't have done it. Shouldn't have done it. You opened Pandora's box. Why'd you do it? All right, so that's coming up a little later. Let's kick it off here. Let's get started. And we're going to do that with Hillary Clinton. Real Clear Politics has an interesting article out about how Hillary Clinton's support among millennials is weakening. So they highlight a rally that she did recently in Ohio and how contrived and embarrassing it was. So here's what they say. Quote, what looked like a block-long line turned out to be a crowd that could barely fill one-fourth of a football field, and the students in attendance, well, they weren't exactly there to support the former Secretary of State. Here's what one of them said. I'm sort of a Bernie Sanders fan. I also had nothing else to do at 10 in the morning, said Brian Miller, a chemical engineering student from Pittsburgh, waiting with more than a dozen friends for the event to start. David Latuki of Morgantown, West Virginia, was there on the off chance he'd see a Clinton, a different Clinton. I'm here for Bill. He would definitely liven things up here. He said he's leaning towards voting Sanders, too. Such sentiment wasn't anecdotal. Scores of students expressed it. Okay, so Real Clear Politics, apparently somebody who works for Real Clear Politics was there, and they were like, basically everybody I spoke to was like, yeah, I'm here, but I like Bernie. So Clinton is trying to generate the same Bernie Sanders excitement around the country that he's clearly generating, and it's flopping. But if you think that's bad, it gets worse. Quote, "The event here wasn't just a failure to connect with millennials, but a fundamental inability to read her audience and adjust her speech, or perhaps laziness or a sense of entitlement that she shouldn't have to work this hard for support. Perhaps it was all of that." They say, quote, "Fired up, ready to go," an early speaker shouted as he prepared the crowd for Clinton. He received only a smattering of polite claps, despite several attempts to get the crowd excited. Former Ohio Governor Ted Strickland, running for a U.S. Senate seat next year, tried the same line with the same results. Strickland also tried some good old-fashioned speechifying that ended up with him screaming at the audience. The kids kept asking each other, "Who is this guy?" The applause was sparse, the moment awkward. Okay, I still haven't even gotten to the best part yet. Here it comes. A good politician would have noticed the audience was barely 12 years old when Clinton battled to win the state in 2008. Instead, Clinton launched into a memorial for Ohio congressmen who were significant long before these kids were politically aware, then thanked the kids for their votes in 2008. Again, they would have been 12 years old back then. So Hillary Clinton's trying to give, like, this fiery speech, and she's talking about all the different issues, and she's like, "And I want to thank you. You lifted me up, Ohio, back in 2008 during the primary season when I was going against Obama, and you made me feel right, and you gave me a chance." And all the kids are like, "What the fuck? We were 12 years old last time. What are you talking about? We didn't vote for you." They say there wasn't the sound of crickets chirping, but no one picked up on what she put down. It was as if time had passed her by. And here it is. Here's the bomb that they drop in this story. This trip was billed as a grassroots support mechanism, with every attendee required to sign a pledge of support before entering the field. Whoa! They're not kidding about that. There's pictures of this up on social media. Hillary Clinton made it so that to attend her rally, well, you have to sign this pledge of support saying that you're going to vote for her, saying that you're on her side. And it's not, like, short either. I mean, I saw the picture of it. It looks like there's a couple things to fill out. And they have the nerve to say, well, this was a grassroots meeting here. This was a rally. This is all genuine support. You're making people sign pledges to be on your side? Oh, my God, that's so sad. And that's so incredibly insecure. People who have genuine support, you know what they don't have to do? Make somebody sign a pledge. They're pretty self-confident, and they know, hey, I have a good message, and people like me, so they're going to vote for me. But Hillary Clinton, it's almost like a weaselly way of trying to get somebody to vote for you. Now, of course, these aren't binding. They can't be binding. But who knows? Are some of the college kids there dumb enough to maybe think, I signed a pledge. I guess I got to vote for her. Maybe. I don't know. But either way, it's just the principle of the thing. It's so gross. The optics of it are gross, especially when you pretend like, oh, this is genuine. Like, I really got a lot of hard support here. Meanwhile, I know we've spoken about it time and time again, but Bernie Sanders shows up in bumblefuck Iowa in places that are only supposed to seat 100 people, and thousands of people show up, and they're genuinely excited. You want to know why? Because they get the sense that he cares about the issues, and it's not just a facade. It's not just a show. He's not just a narcissist trying to get more power. And that's the sad thing about Hillary. And I get tweets all the time. I mean, understand something, guys. She is using more progressive rhetoric right now. There's no doubt about it. And she's releasing some progressive plans. There's no doubt about it. But the bottom line is, I don't believe her. See, people are wondering, like, hey, man, why aren't you covering the thing that she said about this? Why aren't you covering the fact that she just came out with a platform, a proposal about money and politics, and she hates Citizens United and stuff like that? And there are a lot of people listening to the show who happen to like Hillary Clinton. But look, the thing is, like I said, if I don't believe her, I'm not going to cover it and give you the false impression, the misimpression, that she's somebody who really is akin to Bernie Sanders. Now, I get it. I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's not like she's as bad as President Ted Cruz would be. She's not as bad as President Mike Huckabee would be. She's not as bad as Jeb Bush or you name the dumbass Republican. Of course, that's obvious, that's clear. But she's no progressive. I venture to say She's not even really a liberal. Every once in a while, sometimes, she'll throw a bone out there when it comes to actual policies she pushes for, like when she was in the Senate. She'll throw some bones out there for social issues stuff. But in terms of economic policy, she's nowhere near a progressive. And we've given specific examples of that, but I can go into more detail if you'd like, or I could bring up some of the old stuff again. Elizabeth Warren, before she was in the Senate, she went and spoke to Hillary Clinton and said, I need you to oppose this new bankruptcy bill, which makes it so that the people get screwed over and the corporations basically rob them. And Hillary Clinton told Elizabeth Warren, oh, yeah, no, I'm totally on your side. I'm with the people on that one. And then what happened? Over time, she ended up voting for it. She ended up being on the side of the big banks and the corporations. And even we don't even need to just look at economic policy, although her record on economic policy is clear, but look at her foreign policy votes. On Iraq war alone, game, set, match, over. I'm not voting for you. I'm not interested in you. You're going to vote for the Iraq war, the biggest foreign policy mistake of our time, and then you're going to go out there and say, oh, yes, I'm just as progressive as Bernie Sanders. My ass cheeks you are. Step aside, Hillary. It's getting annoying. It's getting weird. And all of your support, it's basically a paper tiger. I mean, don't get me wrong, she's leading in the polls and she's leading by a wide margin. But I contend that's only because she has higher name recognition already. She has a bigger celebrity status already. People know her. So when you bring her up to a standard Democratic voter who might not be into all the nuance of this stuff, they'll go, oh, yeah, I guess Hillary Clinton, sure, I'd vote for her. But when people learn who Bernie Sanders is and they listen to what he's saying, there's genuine excitement there. You know why? Because they believe him, and he has a record to back it up. Okay. Next. Let's get into ISIS. Not a good story coming up here. Not a good story. Reuters is reporting on some terrible news coming out of Syria. They say that the last remaining oil fields under regime control have been captured. Quote, ISIS fighters have seized the last major oil field under Syrian government control during battles over a vast central desert zone. Jazal is a medium-sized field that lies to the northwest of the rebel-held ancient city of Palmyra, close to a region that holds Syria's main natural gas fields and multi-million dollar extraction facilities. So there are also reports out at the same time now that Russia is increasing military aid to Assad and even sending in some troops to help fight ISIS. And naturally, the U.S. is against this. So look at our fucked up priorities again here. We see that ISIS captured another oil field in Syria, the last one that the regime held. And the U.S. is like, hey, Russia, don't get involved there. Don't get involved and try to take the oil field away from ISIS. Now, I get it. You don't like Assad. You don't like whatever. Other people involved in the fight. Sure, that's understandable. But we have to live in the real world. And in the real world, your options are, does it go to the government and Assad and the Shia forces in the region, or does it go to ISIS? Where does the oil go to? Where does the money go to, basically? Where does the funding go to? If your answer there is ISIS, I have to question your intelligence. I have to do that. And the U.S., of course, views it through the lens of, well, we don't want Russia to get involved because then they're showing military prowess again, and they're showing that they're being aggressive, and they're showing, I mean, we've heard this all before. Shut it. I don't care. It's clear that what they're doing in this case is they're saying, well, we just want to beat back ISIS and get the oil fields back under control of the government. Of course, Assad is aligned with Putin in Russia. He also is aligned with Iran. Again, we're enemies with Iran, even though we just did this deal with them recently. So we view this through the lens of geopolitics and control of the region. And it's like a big chessboard, and how do we get somebody in control of that area who's more pro-U.S. so we can get that oil and we can do this? You know what? Bottom line is right now your main focus should be, let's just make it so that ISIS is not getting the oil and ISIS is not getting the money as a result of that. And as I read this article here, my main takeaway was, or what I kept thinking was, You had one job, international community. Now, you guys know I don't want the U.S. to be involved alone. I don't want the U.S. leading a fight because ISIS does not pose a direct threat to the United States of America right now. But, as I've said time and time again, I have no problem with the international community going in there and trying to take out ISIS specifically. So what I said in the three or four other times I laid out a plan to fight ISIS is your main thing has to be forget everything else. You have to get the oil fields out of their control because the oil fields are financing their entire operation. Now, they have other things that they do in order to get money. For example, sometimes, although they break some ancient stuff in Palmyra, sometimes they sell artifacts on the black market and they get money that way. But most of their money at this point is coming from the fact that they control so many oil fields. So if you cut off their funding, if you cut off their access to the oil fields and you maintain that, you hold control of the fields, not to take the oil, but just to keep them away from ISIS and give them back to their original people, well, then that's how you're going to eventually defeat them. And the one thing that would really be a path to victory, the one thing that would really shut off the growth of this group is the one thing that the international community is failing miserably at right now. And I do think a lot of this is because of incompetence. I mean, I get it. At times they've tried to take back oil fields in this area or that area, but is it their main focus? No, it's not. And we see this in U.S. policy, too. We're so busy droning people in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and in areas of Syria, and by the way, having a fairly high civilian casualty rate. We're so busy doing that that we don't realize that, well, wait a second, we're trying to bomb an idea, and that's not necessarily going to work because other people can subscribe to that idea and keep the group the same size or maybe it would even grow. Instead of doing that, why not go to the source that funds everything? Why not make it so that even if somebody gets radicalized on the internet and they want to do jihad, well, guess what? You can't join ISIS because ISIS is fucking bankrupt. They're shit out of luck. They got no more cash. They can't afford to bring you to the desert and then have you fight. So, and look, I understand that then maybe the person will say, I'm going to go to Boko Haram. I'm going to go to Al-Shabaab. I'm going to go to this place. I'm going to go to that place. And that's a problem that we have to deal with in a different way. But if your main foreign policy goal is we need to limit ISIS, we need to fight ISIS, we need to destroy ISIS, well, then the way you go about doing that is to cut off their funding, and you're losing on that front. So, you know, for all the military experts out there and all the people at the UN that are involved in this fight and all the moderate Sunni militias in the region and the Shia fighters in the region and the Kurds in the region who are fighting them, the main goal has to be you cut off their funding because you can't function without the funding. And as of right now, we're letting them have all the funding they can dream of, and then we're somehow trying to defeat them as the money keeps flowing in and the oil keeps flowing in. That's not going to happen. We need to win in a battle of ideas. That's the fight to prevent people to continue to go to them and to fight jihad, so win in the battle of ideas, and outside of that, to take them on, step number one is you cut off the oil field access, and you're failing at that. Okay. Now let's do the Dick Cheney story, and then we'll take our first break. Dick Cheney went on Fox News Sunday, and Chris Wallace decided to ask him real questions. Let's watch.
Mr. Vice President, in your book, you compare Obama's Iran deal to Neville Chamberlain appeasing Hitler in Munich in 1938. Really?
Yes. You know, if you look at what happened with respect to the Iranian deal, the only winner are the Iranians, and they got everything they asked for. The losers are the United States, are the friends and allies of the United States in the region, the Israelis, the Saudis, and others. The overall outcome, I think, will be to shift significantly the balance of power in that part of the world to the Iranians. I think they'll end up dominating, partly not because of the nuclear deal, but also because of the lifting of the embargo on ballistic missiles and on conventional weapons. So I think it's a big deal, a major, major defeat, in my mind, in terms of our position in the region.
Okay, so two things there. First of all, Iran is getting conventional weapons to fight ISIS. If Cheney isn't for that, then the follow-up question should be, well, why are you okay with ISIS getting more powerful? Because that's what's going to happen if you don't allow Iran to have conventional weapons. See, he's afraid of, or he says he's afraid of, well, they're going to use those weapons to fight Israel, or they're going to use those weapons to fight the U.S. Yeah, I'm sure they're going to try to invade Wichita next week. Please, spare me. They're not going to do that because the military budgets of the U.S. and Israel are absurdly bigger than the military budget in Iran. It's a rinky-dink military budget. But they're currently fighting ISIS, along with other moderate Sunnis and along with Kurds, and they need this in order to do that. So if you don't want them to have conventional weapons, then you need to explain why you would prefer that ISIS wins. Now, the second thing is, notice how Cheney just repeats the initial claim when he's asked to justify his claim. He never gives reasons. It's just like, oh, well, why do you say that the Obama administration is bad on this Iran deal? Why do you say that he's like Neville Chamberlain? He's like, yeah, well, you know, I think that this Iran deal was a bad idea, and it's going to destabilize the region, and we shouldn't have done it. Yeah, but we know that part. That was part of the question. He says, why do you believe that? He just restates his point. No, but you didn't give me any reasons. You just restated your point. This is how people who are not that bright think and talk. Now, there's one other funny aspect to this. Dick Cheney compared Obama to Neville Chamberlain. Now, Neville Chamberlain, he was the leader of the UK, and he did a peace deal with Hitler. Now, why is he viewed negatively through through the lens of history? Well, because you couldn't appease Hitler, because Hitler wanted to dominate the fucking world. So what was in that deal? Well, what was in the deal was he signed away the Sudetenland. What is the Sudetenland? Well, that's the German-speaking portion of Czechoslovakia. So he gave away part of Czechoslovakia to Hitler. That's why everybody goes, oh my God, you know, he's an appeaser. He crumbled to Hitler. He tried anything to get peace, and it didn't fucking work. Now, the irony of Cheney saying that Obama is like Neville Chamberlain is that what did Dick Cheney and George W. Bush do? Dick Cheney and George W. Bush overthrew Saddam Hussein, the Sunni leader in Iraq, and put in Maliki. Maliki is a Shiite. What's Iran? They're Shiites. So what happened to Iraq after the U.S. invasion? Iran became basically a client state, a puppet state of Iran. So in other words, if anybody's more like Neville Chamberlain, it's you, Dick Cheney. Because Neville Chamberlain gave away part of Czechoslovakia to Hitler. You gave away part of Iraq to the Iranian government and to the Ayatollah. It's amazing he doesn't see these parallels. But understand, that's still a little bit of a stretch because I don't think the Iranian government is as bad as fucking Adolf Hitler. And anybody who thinks that isn't following the situation closely enough and they believe all the nonsense propaganda and the hype when there are no actions to back up the tough talk that you hear from Iran. And by the way, we do our own tough talking, like Duncan Hunter saying we should nuke them, Sheldon Adelson, a top donor, saying we should nuke them, Louis Gohmert saying we should bomb them, Netanyahu saying we should bomb them. So there's another tough talk to go around for everybody. But the interview's not over. Chris Wallace goes after him harder now.
Mr. Vice President, you say that President Obama never put a serious nuclear option on the table, but you and President Bush, the Bush-Cheney administration, dealt with Iran for 8 years, and I think it's fair to say that there was never any real serious military threat. And during your time, let's put these numbers up on the screen, Iran went from zero known centrifuges in operation to more than 5,000. So,
whoopsie.
In fairness, didn't you leave, the Bush-Cheney administration, leave President Obama with a mess?
Well, I don't think of it that way. In fact, there was military action that had an impact on the Iranians. It was when we took down Saddam Hussein.
And it helped them.
There was a period of time when they stopped their program because they were afraid that what we did to Saddam, we were going to do to them next. We also, when we took down Saddam, Muammar Gaddafi surrendered up his nuclear program. When we got that, then we went and got his supplier, Mr. A.Q. Khan. We did a lot to limit nuclear proliferation in the region while we were there.
But the centrifuges went from zero to 5,000.
Well, they may well have gone, but that happened on Obama's watch and not on our watch.
No. By 2009, they were at 5,000.
Right, but I think we did a lot to deal with the arms control problem in the Middle East.
That was adorable. That was adorable. See what happens when somebody actually dares to question somebody like Dick Cheney? She fucking crumbles. She fucking... There's nothing there. There's no there there. You know, you say you did a good job, but what's interesting is they had zero centrifuges, and then by the time you got out of office, they had 5,000 centrifuges. And Cheney's like, well, Chris, we did a lot. We did a lot. We were able to be successful in what we did. He's like, no. You didn't hear me. Under your administration, it went from zero to 5,000 centrifuges.
Obama. Obama. Barack Hussein Obama.
No, it was under you. Right. Well, we did a lot. Again, you're not giving reasons, you're not giving data, you're not giving information. And one of the few things he said there, that which was not just restating what he said originally, was, we took out Saddam. If anything, that helped Iran, like we just said, because Maliki got in power. Maliki's a Shiite, the government of Iran, they're Shiite. And they looked at Iraq as a client state at that point. So you're bragging, that's what we did to stop them, but that helped them. And then he brings up Gaddafi. It's got nothing to do with anything. Well, Gaddafi gave up his nukes after he saw that we're fucking lunatics and we went after Saddam when Saddam didn't even have nukes. That's got nothing at all to do with Iran. And the facts are what Chris Wallace said here, that, hey, it went from zero centrifuges to 5,000 under your watch. And remember, it's Dick Cheney who says they should have zero centrifuges. See, I'm of the belief, because this is what the IAEA has said all along, that they were never really trying to create a nuke. They had nuclear power, but they were using the nuclear power for their power grid and for scientific research. They never got to the point where they could make a nuke. But remember, it's Dick Cheney's own standard that we're talking about here, where he says, they should have no nuke for anything ever. And then, he would still want to invade them after that. They should have no nukes for anybody. Well, then look in the fucking mirror and blame yourself, because the facts are you did a terrible job trying to contain what you viewed as a threat. Meanwhile, the Obama administration got what you could only dream of, which is total and utter success with this deal. All right. Break time, bitch. When we come back, we got Mike Huckabee and I Respond to Conservapedia. Oh, and it's going to be pretty. All right.
By the things I buy, I'm so high, I'm on point, and I can feel the jump. By the look in your eye, when I ride by, I don't care. You can go straight to the top this year, nigga, I'm so fly. I got money, you got to feel the reason. By the things I buy, bank is fresh off the gutter, too smooth to stutter. This nigga know the river like two scoops of butter. Before I leave the crib, I tell my mother I love her. Grab the burner, but she ain't concerned cause he's a earner. My bitch lays it out real nice for me to earn her. Might wake up and fuck like Ike and Tina Turner. It's a privilege to ride with a select. Two girls over there, don't got a problem giving head. Paranoia is on you, that's why your mama's in your bed. Fuck a rich and chiller and bought some mama for your head. When the block I'm from, niggas be damn near 40, still fucking. Niggas baby mamas is pregnant, still fucking is even cause they boyfriends are scrub like Brillo. Cause bank is cooler than the other side of the pillow. The chronic is blowing for my niggas that got locked up in the corners. And now they gotta go back home. I'm so high, I got money, so that's good enough reason. I buy the things I buy, I'm so high. I'm on point, you can tell that you're chillin'. By the look in your eye, when I ride by, I don't care. Don't confuse me with these suckers, cause when I switch, you ain't more ooze than a skip in my loo move. That's a rucker. God for giving thanks to gifts. You think that bandana makes you a gangster? All I see is the handkerchief. Nigga, there's no one out to click that freezes. Believe that, I ain't scared of shit but Jesus. Look, dog, I'm roam with the poodles. Difference is, I'm eating in Rome, and you eating Roman noodles. Your boy is corrupt, kid. Banks is in a bitch to the store, and four pieces. Cake like Puff did. You chumps can't afford these homes. Look around, I got 40 cones. Now look down, that's 40 stones. And that's only in a necklace. I'm phony and I'm reckless.
Tony in a Lexus. Fresh out the gutter, scrap what your man thought. I'm in the hood with more straps than the junk sort. I got money, you know, good enough to think about the things I buy. I'm so high. I'm on point, you have to feel the jealousy by the look in your eye. When I buy, die. When I travel, I know I'm gonna get stuck. Cause they harass us in the airport like I'm the one that's blowing shit up. I got the patience of a high school teacher and a bright future. Why the fuck would I have a bomb on my sneaker? All the goody girls back off us. My heart's colder than Jack Dawson. We pack shows in the track Boston. Black rose in my black faucet. A black rose for a rat's coffin. Blowing holes in that black coffin. Blowing the rose and I'm back flossing. No one knows how much that's costing. Fuck ass, don't need a green moves me. I got a clean Uzi. A pair of gloves and a mask in a screen movie. So if you're plotting or popping off, you seem to fool me. I get a little red spider on your green bougie. My name ring East State. So you ain't gotta go.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. We are back. I'm debating which thing I want to start with here. You know what? I'm going to start with the Conservapedia article because that's how I fucking roll, son. All right. So the website Conservapedia, which is the right-wing biased version of Wikipedia, did a page for Secular Talk that was just riddled with factual errors. So I did a segment fact-checking the page, and apparently my awesome audience decided to bombard the website to fix the page. And Conservapedia did not like that very much. So I think they blocked people now from changing it, and they also decided it would be a good idea to issue me a challenge on the main page of their website. Guys, why'd you do it? You shouldn't have done it. Why'd you do it? You opened Pandora's box. That was a bad move. Funny is that my audience was only successful in fixing some of the BS on the page because they actually have built-in bias by the rules. So by definition, it has to be biased in a conservative direction and in a Christian direction. So, like, for example, the part where they talk about my stance on climate change, it says, I believe in the, quote, liberal hoax of global warming. So this is the website that decided to challenge me to call out their factual errors. I would need a team of 13,000 people to work around the clock to get all of your factual errors and correct them. But let me give you the exact wording here of the challenge, or as they say, quote, challenges to atheist Kyle Kalinske. Conservapedia challenges atheist Kyle Kalinske to find one factual error in Conservapedia's atheism article. Will Conservapedia's atheism article pop Kyle Kalinske's atheist bubble? I'm the one in a bubble, not the people who made the website Conservapedia, which says we are biased in a conservative direction and we are Christians. They're not in a bubble, of course, because to be objective, you have to be a conservative and a Christian. Obviously, atheists are always in a bubble. They say, using the definition of atheism that encyclopedias of philosophy use, does Kalinske have proof and evidence that atheism is true? We're going to come back to that in a second, because even the way they word it is absurd. Not that I need to tell you guys that. It's relatively clear. But let's go to the first part of this challenge. So, challenge. So, first, let me read you the very first part of the entry on the page for atheism. It says the following. Atheism, as defined by the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, the Routledge Encyclopedia of Philosophy, and other philosophy reference works, is the denial of the existence of God. Atheism has been examined by many disciplines in terms of its effects on individuals and society, and these effects will be covered shortly. As far as individuals adopting an atheistic worldview, atheism has a number of causal factors, and these will be elaborated on below. Okay. Now, in that first part that I just read you right there, there are three citation links. One is for atheism's effects, and another is for an atheistic worldview, and a third is for the causal factors of atheism. So in that first section, they have three links there where, you know, if you click it, it sends you to another page that they have, which presumably has information, which is dry and straightforward. And then, you know, you're supposed to say, oh, okay, so this is what they think the effects of atheism are. This is the causal factors, yada, yada. Okay, so I didn't go searching through the article specifically, hey, let me find the easiest things that I can fact check here. Let me go rip them apart. No, it didn't require actually working hard here. All I did, I just clicked the first few links. That's all I did. So what happened when I did that? Well, when you click the first link under atheism's effects, here's what it says. Quote, it is estimated that in the past 100 years, governments under the banner of atheistic communism have caused the death of somewhere between about 40 million to 259 million human lives. They're really trying to be objective here, aren't they? They're not trying to say atheism bad, atheism wrong, atheism evil. No, they're really being nuanced, and they're taking an academic approach to what they're looking at here. Now I'm going to get to the source for all this information in a little bit. So then I clicked the next link in that first part there, the next citation link. Under atheistic worldview, it says the following. Not possessing a religious basis for morality, which can provide a legitimate basis for objective morality, atheists are fundamentally incapable of having a coherent system of morality. For example, atheists have been the biggest mass murderers in history. Oh, yes, 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 I know. Now, if you bring up to them Christianity, at least they're consistent because they're so focused on the murderers, the bad people. So if you bring up atheism to them, they say the Inquisition, the Crusades, Anders Breivik in Norway, who killed in the name of Christianity and murdered over 60 children. So at least they're consistent, where if you look under Christianity, they go directly to the murderers. They go directly to all the people who have done horrific things in the name of Christianity. They go directly to the fact that over 85% of people in Nazi Germany were Christians. They go right to that, right? Oh, they don't go to that. See, they only do that with atheism. And again, hold your horses here, because I'm going to tell you what their sources are in just a second. Under causal factors of atheism, so the next link in that main part, it says, number one, moral depravity. Main cause. The main cause of atheism is you're just a bad person. You have fucked up morals. This actually goes back to something we talk about all the time, how ignorant people think, oh, well, I mean, if somebody's an atheist, what they're saying is, I am immoral. It's the same thing. It's interchangeable. That's what a lot of ignorant people think. But with people like this, they've gone beyond ignorance and to all-out stupidity, where they're claiming as a fact, they say, the main causal factor for atheism, moral depravity, quote, the history of the atheist community and various studies concerning the atheist community point to moral depravity being a causal factor for atheism. Okay, now, let's get to the sources. So for those three things, what are the sources? Well, I shit you not, a Christian apologetics website called str.org is their source for the number one causal factor of atheism. So you know what they're doing, right? They say, well, we're a Christian conservative website. We just put a claim here. And what's our evidence for the claim? How do we prove the claim? Some Christian guy said it. Some Christian guy said atheists are bad, so I'm going to take that as an objective source and put it on my fucking website. All right, how about for the atheistic worldview claims, which I went through with you? The source for that is another Christian apologetics website called apologetics.net. they're really trying hard to be objective here. See, what they did is they wanted to set up a more accurate version of Wikipedia. So they made it so that every claim that they make is backed up by somebody who says, I am a Christian apologist. Because, you know, they're the ones who give the most dry, straightforward information. The name of the website is apologetics.net. And these guys had the nerve to say to me, I dare you to fact check our website. So let me get this straight. You really believe that you can cite an apologetics website for Christianity which says, atheists suck, man. Incredible, incredible. And for the claims of murders under atheistic worldview, which I just went through with you, how they said, oh, atheists killed all these people. You ready for this? The link for that, the source for that, it sends you to a blog. And the blog is an anti-communist blog, doesn't even mention the word atheism. So they're using a source that doesn't even back up their claims. See, their implication is, well, atheists, atheism, that's why all these people were killed. But they send you to a blog which says, actually, no, communism is the reason why all these people died. They died in the name of communism. You want to know why? Communism is a pseudo-religion. Communism is where, you know, Joseph Stalin, in the case of the Soviet Union, oh, he was the demigod, the semi-deity that we got in power, and he wants to take all the land and distribute it and do this and do that, so he needed to purge people and kill people, and he did. He was an atheist, but he just happened to be an atheist. He didn't kill in the name of his atheism. He killed in the name of communism. Your source even admits that. You don't admit that because you just want to blame the atheist. You want to know why? Because you're anti-atheist bigots. It's clear. It's dripping out of every single thing that you say. Now, I'll prove my point here for you. So, three out of the three links I clicked went back to either an apologetics website or a blog which didn't even say what they wanted it to say. So, all nonsense, all absurd. But listen to other portions of the page, other segments of their page about atheism. This is incredible. I'm not making up any of these. You can go and look for yourself. Now, the page is longer than the Wikipedia page on atheism. Well, now, why is that? I wonder. Could it be because they're really trying, oh, atheism bad, atheism wrong, disprove it. Oh, let's say all the bad things about it. It can't be because of that, right? They just care more about information than Wikipedia, obviously. Listen to some of the segments. Section 3.1.1, atheism and hell. 3.3, there are no atheists in foxholes. 4, denials that atheists exist. Atheistic communist regimes and forced labor. Biblical statements concerning atheism. Atheism and mass murder. Academic studies consistently challenge the link between religion and war. Irreligion and domestic violence. Atheism and immoral views. Atheism and child pornography. Immorality and prominent atheists. Atheism and lower empathy for others. Atheism and bestiality. Atheism and hypocrisy. Atheism and meaninglessness. And then here's my favorite, arrogance of atheism and atheists. Yes, yes, we're the arrogant ones. You're the one that makes the page that you pretend is factual where all you do is bash atheists. But oh my God, that fucking Richard Dawkins, can you believe it? Oh my God, this is so sad. And I, by the way, I'm still not even done here. There's much more. Atheism and its inability to explain love. It goes on and on. Atheism and arrogance, they said. Atheism, in the midst of the most arrogant page ever made in human history, they say atheism and arrogance. What's more arrogant? Atheists or the people who say, I believe in this book which says, I know who God is, and oh yeah, in the book is slavery, in the book is a belief, they allude to a belief in the flat earth, in the book is a talking snake and a burning bush and a seven-headed dragon, and I'm so convinced that this is right that I'm going to use sources to back up factual claims that are apologetics website for this thousand-year-old book written by desert dwellers. No, that's not arrogant. It's not arrogant to believe in the book, which has absurd rules, like you can never shave your face. It's immoral. You can never eat shellfish. It's immoral. You can never wear a mix of two different fabrics. It's immoral. Women can never teach men anything, anything in the Bible. But it's not arrogant to believe that and try to impose those beliefs on society. No, it's arrogant when people say, you know, I'm not so sure about that book. It seems a little off. Please spare me. Now, C, since we're in the realm of issuing challenges here, here's my challenge to Conservapedia. There are facts. I love how your article, you say, has facts. It doesn't. But there are facts that you omitted here about atheists. Now, there's not just one kind of lie. A lie of commission is not the only kind of lie that there is. There's also something called a lie of omission. So you paint a misleading picture by leaving out relevant things that are true. So here's my challenge to you. These are facts about atheists, which I'm going to ask you to put in your article about atheism, and all of the sources for this you can see either in the video description box below, and they're real sources, unlike your ridiculous Christian apologetics nonsense. Fact number one, atheists on average have higher IQs than religious people. I didn't say it. The studies say it. Look below, read it, and put it on your website because it's true. Fact number two, highly religious countries are more poor, have lower levels of education, and have worse child nutrition. Fact three, atheists and agnostics know more about religion than the religious. Fact four, only 33% of scientists are religious. More scientists are non-religious. Fact five, only 0.07% of the federal prison population are atheists. The conclusion, they commit fewer crimes, even accounting for the smaller population. So, they commit fewer crimes, 0.07% in prison. You guys would have us believe the entire place is filled with atheists. It's not. Fact six, Christians are more supportive of torture, atheists, and non-believers. They admit this, too. It was in a survey. Fact seven, only 38% of Christians say that violence against civilians is never justified. Only 38%. That's really low. For atheists? Now, since atheists are immoral, obviously that number is going to be much lower, right? 56%. More atheists reject violence against civilians than Christians do. So all your claims about, oh, atheists, they're immoral. Here is a fact where people admit to a pollster. And atheists say, yeah, we don't believe in violence against civilians at a much higher rate than the Christians do. Are you going to add that to your article? All right, and now to the last part of the challenge here. I find it adorable that they pick something and they say, defend this. So they pick their definition that they like the most. They go, why defend this? Why don't you tell me why you think this is true? Prove atheism is true. Has there ever been an atheist who's like, conversation over. I have proved atheism is true. Nobody's ever said that. See, that's your caricature that you've created of atheists in your mind from your bigoted perspective. Now, from a real atheist, I'll tell you what I actually believe, and I'll tell you what many people who are like me believe. It's very simple. So when it comes to belief in God, yes, I lack a belief in God. I have a disbelief in God, and that includes all gods, the Christian God, the God of Hinduism, the God of Buddhism, the God of Scientology. I do not believe in God. So I have a belief that God is not real, or I lack a belief that God is real. Now, notice how I keep using the term belief there. There's a reason I'm using the term belief, because it's my belief. Now, in terms of knowledge, which is something different, what is it that I say? What is it that other prominent atheists say? They say, you ready for this? I hope you're sitting down. I don't know. See, that's why I always try to stress that I am an agnostic atheist. One claim is about knowledge. Do I know that there's no God? Of course not. That's absurd. I don't know. In that sense, I'm an agnostic. In terms of what I believe, I live my life as if there is one, isn't one, because I haven't been convinced of one. So in that case, I am an atheist. So if you're asking me to defend a position, I will defend that position because that's my actual position, and that I think is the most reasonable, because if you want to talk about somebody who's arrogant, it would be the opposite of what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, I don't know, I admit I don't know, but my belief happens to be it's not the case that Jesus is God. It's not the case that any religion has it right. So that's my position, and I will defend that position because that position makes sense. Now, you, on the other hand, you guys like to pretend that your faith is fact. There's a reason why they say it's faith, because you can't back it up and say, I've proved that Christianity is true, which leads to my final point. Look at the way they shifted the burden of proof. I'm the guy who says, look, I don't know, but I don't believe. And they go, fucking arrogant. Prove it. Prove it. You're right. I just told you I don't know. Now, you guys, on the other hand, again, you say Christianity is true. Okay, prove it. You prove it. The burden of proof is on you. You can't prove a negative. If my friend tells me I just drove a Maserati to your house, and then I say, what? And he goes, prove I didn't. How the fuck am I going to prove that? I mean, I guess you could say if I go outside and there's no fucking Maserati there. No, you didn't. You didn't ride a Maserati to my house. I don't see a Maserati here. It's the same thing with them, man. They're like, Christianity is true. And I'm like, wait, really? They're like, God, prove it's not. Prove atheism is true. You're the one making the positive claim. You're the one that has a book that says this has all the answers in it. You're the one making the claim. The burden of proof is on you. You need to prove that atheism, that Christianity is true. So flip to page 27, find the nearest prophecy, and show me where that happened in reality, and you won't be able to fucking do it, which is one of the many reasons why I reject your religion. Now, finally, guys had the nerve to challenge me to a debate, but there's a catch. A written debate. Why would they challenge me to a written debate and not an actual face-to-face debate? Could it be because they understand that I would fact-check their bullshit in real time and make them look ridiculous? No, I know it can't be that. It's got to be some other reason. But they say, well, let's have an atheism versus Christianity debate. Even if they said, let's do it face-to-face and not written. It's written, trying to do a written debate. They're basically telling me, I'm giving you homework. Yeah, I want to do that. But even if it was face-to-face, do I want to do a debate against somebody who's Christian or a Christian apologist from Conservapedia? Yeah, let me pencil you in. On Thursday I'm debating the existence of the Greek gods. On Wednesday I'm debating the existence of the Roman gods. I believe on Saturday I'm having a conversation and a debate about the divine roots of the Bhagavad Gita. On Saturday I'm debating whether or not the tribal gods of the Amazon jungle are true or false. Yeah, let me paint in your ridiculous mythology for Friday. Does that sound good? No, I'm not going to debate you. I'm partly embarrassed that I'm even responding to you in this segment. You're not at a point yet where you can even sit at the adults' table to have a conversation. You work backwards from your conclusion. You say Christianity is true, and that's my starting point. I'm going to work backwards from that and cherry pick to try to make people think that Christianity is true. The way smart people function is they go, show me the evidence, show me reasonable arguments, and I will let it build up upon itself and point to its own conclusion, and then I will believe whatever the conclusion is, regardless of how scary or not scary it is. That's how adults think. You're not an adult, and I'm done wasting my time. Fuck yeah, bitch. That was fun. Conservapedia, game, set, match. Stop embarrassing yourself. Go home. All right, let me take a quick break. When we come back, I got a bunch of stuff I got to get to in this final segment, like 8 stories, but I'm going to squeeze them in, I promise you. All right, stay right there, guys.
What's up? Fresh is our turn, baby. Hey,
I am that nigga, a coochie with a matching interior, three-wheel ride.
corner, and we like brothers.
We shine like pink, daddy.
It's our summer.
I got a lot to get to because I spent forever on that segment. Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee compared anti-gay bigot Kim Davis to Abraham Lincoln. Wonderful.
There are some dissenting voices in the conservative movement. I wanted you to respond to something from Rod Dreher in the American Conservative. He says if the Supreme Court makes a ruling we don't like, we are obliged to obey the law or be willing to suffer the consequences of disobedience. What we cannot do and what the government cannot permit is open defiance of settled law. He believes this is going to backfire on the religious liberty movement. What's your response?
Well, he would have hated Abraham Lincoln because Lincoln ignored the 1857 Dred Scott decision that said black people weren't fully human. It was a wrong decision. And to say that we have to surrender to judicial supremacy is to do what Jefferson warned against, which is, in essence, surrender to judicial tyranny. And we had so many different presidents, including Jefferson, Jackson, Lincoln. There were other founders like Hamilton, Adams, who made it very clear that the courts can't make a law. The Constitution is expressly clear that that's a power reserved to Congress. When the courts have a ruling, then it is incumbent upon Congress to codify that into law and specifically delineate what that means. That hasn't happened,
but,
George.
But, sir, how is this different then from Loving versus Virginia back in 1967? Of course, that was the Supreme Court ruling that struck down bans on interracial marriage. If a clerk at that time had said, listen, my religious beliefs forbid me from issuing this license, would you support that?
Well, it's an incredibly different situation because
so?
What the did in Loving. No, it's not the same, George, not even close. Because in Loving, you still had a marriage which was a man and a woman, and it was equal protection, but it didn't redefine marriage.
Oh, yes, it did. On state law books at the time, they had a ban on interracial marriage, and it was based on the Bible. So they did redefine marriage when they said, we are now going to allow black people and white people to marry, to intermarry. Of course they redefined it. That's what the whole thing was about. And the court decided, well, wait, it makes sense to throw out the Bible and religious reasoning and say, because of equal protection under the law, you can't discriminate against interracial couples. They have a right to get married. That's the exact same reasoning going on today when it comes to the LGBT community. What's so funny is that every single argument, Mike Huckabee flips. He flips everything. So, for example, he said, you know, we're fighting judicial tyranny here. No, no, no. You are the tyrant. You're the tyrant. Because you're the one saying, I'm going to take my value system and impose it on other people. Now, Mike Huckabee likes to think, well, the gays are imposing their values on us. No, they're not. They're not forcing you to get gay married. They're saying you can get whatever kind of married you like. If you want to get straight married, go ahead. You don't want to get married, go ahead. But if people want to get gay married, you can't stop them. See, under this system, it accommodates everybody. Nobody's left out. You know, we've set it up so that you can get whatever kind of married you want, and that nobody's being discriminated against. Under Mike Huckabee's system, he wants to discriminate against gays. But then when he's asked the question, well, wouldn't you be standing with the racist people back when it was interracial marriage? She's like, no, it's totally different. It's not totally different. It's exactly the same. And I like when this is his new thing he says all the time now. The Supreme Court can't make law. So that's his way of saying, well, this is invalid. Except, Mike, you missed it. They didn't make a law. They're not pretending they made a law. What they're saying is it's a reasonable interpretation of the Constitution to look at the 14th Amendment and equal protection under the law and say, that should apply to gay people. Perfectly reasonable. So the 14th Amendment, as it is right now, as it's written right now, if you read that, a reasonable interpretation of it is you can't block gay people from getting married because it says in the 14th Amendment you need to do equal protection under the law, and that includes gay people, and that includes the right to marry. So this idea that they made a law, they didn't make a law, they didn't even pretend to make a law, you're setting up a straw man so that you can knock it down and try to explain civics to us. Meanwhile, you're the one that doesn't understand civics, because you're doing the same thing Rick Santorum did, where you say, if the Supreme Court makes a decision I dislike, I'm just going to override it, I'm just going to overrule it, and that's going to be the end of the conversation. And notice what he said at the beginning. He's like, well, yeah, I mean, Abraham Lincoln didn't listen to the courts when they were pro-slavery. So Kim Davis, Abraham Lincoln, tomato, tomato, same fucking person. Oh, you sad, sad soul. Bite your tongue now. Pump your brakes. Pump your brakes. What are you doing? Seriously? Kim Davis is like Abraham Lincoln. Kim Davis. See, that's the thing. Huckabee, when he says, hey, unjust laws shouldn't be followed, when he says that, he's not wrong. He's right about that. The problem is the laws that he thinks are unjust are in fact just, and they are moral. See, because he has a backwards moral code and his beliefs are fucked up and his ethical system is wrong, he views himself and he views Kim Davis as some sort of hero, saving civilization by being discriminatory and bigoted against gays. But the thing is, Mike, history is going to judge you in the proper light and in the proper historical context, where they view you more in line with the people who opposed releasing the slaves. They're going to view you more in line with the people who were against interracial marriage. You want to know why they're going to view you that way? Because they're right to view you that way. That is more who you agree with. See, you think, and Kim Davis thinks she's Rosa Parks, but as somebody pointed out on Twitter, no, you're the awkward old white lady in the front of the bus screaming at Rosa Parks to get to the back of the bus. You think you're the hero, but you're the villain, and everybody else sees it but you. All right, next. I got a lot of religion stuff today. We're living up to the name of the show today, Secular Talk. Okay. P has a really interesting article out on the rise of hate crimes in the UK. They say, quote, official figures released on Monday showed Islamophobic and anti-Semitic hate crimes in London have soared over the last year, with global events apparently contributing to the rise. Police reported 816 Islamophobic offenses in the 12 months to July, up more than 70% from 478 in the previous 12 months. Anti-Semitic crimes surged 93% over the same period, with 499 incidents recorded compared with 258 the previous year. An organization which monitors Islamophobic incidents said around 60% of victims of such offenses are women wearing a hijab or headscarf, and they actually say the more they're covered up, the harsher the crimes are against them. So if they were in the Cobb, for example, there's been harsher crimes and more brutality against those people. The Community Service Trust, which is a Jewish security charity, reported a 53% increase in anti-Semitic incidents across Britain between January and June compared with the same period last year. Some 473 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded during the first 6 months of 2015 compared to 309 in the first half of 2014. So they go on to explain that this is probably linked to recent events and instability. You know, you have the refugee crisis right now with Syria. Not too long ago, of course, you had the Charlie Hebdo situation. So you have it's a tense situation right now, and it's likely the case. Now, they don't say this in the article, but we've also done other stories about the rise of the far right in Europe again. Now, it's likely the case that when you look at figures like this, that plays a huge role in this. You know, take, for example, the Golden Dawn Party in Greece. I know it's not directly related to this, but that kind of mentality is on the rise. The Golden Dawn Party in Greece, they're openly neo-Nazi. They held seats in parliament, man. It's crazy. And it's not just there. It's in other places, too. So there's this rise of the far right, which is really scary. But then also, there's a rise in, if you look at the Jewish community, in an ultra-Orthodox belief system within the community, and there's a rise in the Muslim community, fundamentalism. So you have fundamentalist Muslims, ultra-Orthodox Jews, and far-right extremists all packed into this little place in Europe, and they're all, you know, tense and on edge because everybody views the other one as the enemy, and they're the extremists, and we're the good ones, and they're the extremists, and we're the good ones. And then at the end of the day, what's happening? The moderate Muslims, the moderate Jews, the political moderates, the liberals, the centrists, the lefties, they look around and they're like, let's work this thing out, guys. Let's try to be reasonable here. And then, you know, the rates of hate crimes are going through the roof as this is happening. So, I mean, look, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but it all comes back to you need a proper education system, you need a secular education system, and you need to, you know, teach the right values. You need to teach that fundamentalist religion is wrong, it's incorrect, and it's dangerous because it fosters more tribalism. Same thing with far-right ideologies. They really become pseudo-religious at a point. When you're a neo-Nazi, that's more of a pseudo-religion than a political identity, and you're closer to a terror group than anything else. So you need to teach that kind of stuff is wrong. And as of how you deal with this problem moving forward, that's a tough one, man. It beats me, but all we can do is condemn all of the violence against every group, whether it's the anti-Muslim violence, whether it's the anti-Jewish violence, or any other kind of violence. And there's one thing that they all share in common, whether it's the fundamentalist Muslims, the ultra-Orthodox Jews, or the far right. There's one thing they all share in common. They're extremely, extremely conservative. So perhaps the answer to all this is liberalism. Okay, next. How many do I have left? Because I really got to try to get all these in, but that looks like it's not going to happen. Five in 20 minutes. Let's go. A Planned Parenthood clinic in Pullman, Washington, was set on fire last week in an arson attack. So the CEO of Planned Parenthood in Washington said the following, quote, "This is an appalling act of violence towards Planned Parenthood, but unfortunately a predictable ripple effect from the false and incendiary attacks that fuel violence from extremists." Raw Story says, officials said alarms inside the building were tripped before the fire was reported around 3:30 a.m. on Friday morning. The facility will need to be closed for several weeks because of extensive fire and smoke damage. So are you ready for this? Particular Planned Parenthood didn't even do abortions. You know what this reminds me of? This story reminds me of all those different cases of idiot far-right wingers trying to do anti-Muslim terrorism, and they end up doing anti-Sikh terrorism because they don't know the fucking difference. Like, well, they got darker skin, and it's some other kind of religion and ethnicity. Kill them. Like the fucking mass shooter who went to the Sikh temple who thought it was Muslims. Now, obviously, it doesn't matter who you're doing it against. It's wrong. It's wrong if you do it against Muslims. It's wrong if you do it against Sikhs. It's wrong if you do it against anybody, okay? But they're so stupid, they can't even get their hate right. So they go and they do this firebombing of Planned Parenthood, thinking like, oh, yeah, we're going to get those abortionists. Meanwhile, the guys are like, we don't have abortion at this Planned Parenthood. Fucking clowns, man. They're so stupid. They're so fucking stupid. Now, there's another aspect of this story that pisses me off, which is you don't see much about this, man. Like, maybe it gets a quick mention on mainstream media networks, some outlets online that usually do a good job or, you know, ran with the articles and whatnot. But this story isn't nearly as big as it would be if the facts were exactly the same, but let's say instead of an abortion clinic, or this isn't even an abortion clinic, instead of a Planned Parenthood clinic, it was a military recruiting office, and it was arson done by a Muslim. Could you imagine how big that story would be? It would be huge. Now, there were no fatalities in this. So saying, even if you keep that the case, no fatalities, but a Muslim attacks, you know, a military recruitment center and just, you know, lights a fire, throws a bomb, whatever. I think that would be much bigger news. But when it's homegrown terror, when it's our own terror, then, you know, people are like, well, I mean, God. They did have that creepy video that came out recently, which shows Planned Parenthood is bad, right? Right. See, that's what annoys me, man. They think they're being more moral than everybody else. They think this was the right thing to do. Isn't that incredible? Meanwhile, fact-checking organizations ripped those Planned Parenthood sting videos to shreds. You want to know why? What was the main claim in those videos? Planned Parenthood is selling baby parts for profit. That was the main claim. What was the reality? Planned Parenthood was not selling anything, donating fetal tissue for medical research, and the costs they were discussing in the different videos were transportation costs, because apparently it's not cheap to send fetal tissue to a lab and preserve it properly in order to do research to try to cure diseases. So if there's any crime that happened there, it was when this hack right-wing group pretended to be interested in medical research when in reality they were just trying to bring down an organization doing the right thing. And by the way, I know facts are stubborn things and conservatives don't believe in them, but 97% of Planned Parenthood funding does not go towards abortion. 97% is contraception, breast exams, women's health issues and stuff like that. All stuff, by the way, that prevents unwanted pregnancies. And the 3% that they do that is abortion, that's paid out of pocket by the people who get the abortion. Because the Hyde Amendment is something that's been added to multiple bills for years now, which says the federal government cannot fund any abortions. So that's already the law. All these idiot right-wingers who say, oh my God, defund it because federal tax dollars are going to abortion. That's not true. That hasn't been the case for a very long time now. So they already have the policy that they're fighting for, but because they're such fucking zealots and they're so extreme, look at what happens. People do terrorism because of their nonsense videos and their nonsense propaganda. Okay. Next. Whew. All right. I'm trying, man. I'm racing to the finish. Another reason I got to get a lot of these in is because next week I'm not here and I want to upload a bunch of stuff. I want it to feel to you guys like I'm still here even though I'm not. Some Christian fundamentalists and Orthodox Jews are claiming that Jimmy Carter's cancer is divine punishment for his treatment of Israel. Mediaite reports on this, quote, apparently there are enough Orthodox Jews and Christians claiming that former President Jimmy Carter's cancer is a divine punishment from God to warn an influential rabbi to respond. So according to the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, Rabbi Benjamin Blech wrote a post concerning the matter for the website Aish. He said, quote, there are those already proclaiming with prophetic certainty that Jimmy Carter is being punished by God for his sins against Israel and the Jewish people. And with that smug analysis of heavenly justice, these false prophets have unwittingly besmirched millions of righteous and God-fearing people who similarly find themselves suffering from incurable diseases and facing painful deaths. So you know how people always talk about, oh, politicizing a tragedy, politicizing this, politicizing that? Well, most of the time people bring that up, it's a ridiculous thing to bring up because oftentimes you have political solutions to real-world problems. So to politicize it actually makes sense because you're trying to prevent a problem from occurring in the future. But in this case, we're talking about people politicizing a death when there's no rational basis for it, there's no possible solutions. All they want to do is blame the poor guy who has cancer for something he should not be blamed for by any stretch of the imagination. Now, why are fundamentalists so angry about this? Well, Jimmy Carter's record on Israel is actually really interesting. So he got peace between Israel and Egypt, which is fucking amazing. That peace has held to today. And he's upset about the occupation. Now, he's spoken about this before. I'll give you just one quote, something he said that got under the skin of the far right. One of the greatest human rights crimes on earth is the starvation and imprisonment of 1.6 million Palestinians. So because President Carter dares to say, hey, let's try to solve this problem right now, let's try to acknowledge what's happening and fix it, he's smeared by the far right as, well, you're an anti-Semite, you're against Israel, you're a bad person, and, oh yeah, your cancer came from God. The hilarious thing about all this is they view President Carter as the extremist. Yeah, the guy who's been fighting for peace this whole time, that guy's the extremist. And then meanwhile, in classic far right-wing fashion, they just make shit up. See, it's so easy to be a fundamentalist right-winger, whether it's an ultra-Orthodox Jew, whether it's a Christian fundamentalist, whether it's an Islamist or a fundamentalist Muslim. Because you don't need facts. You don't need information. You don't need data. You just need to smear the other side and be as big of a dick as possible and say shit like, I'm happy you got cancer, and you got cancer because you dared to push for peace in the Middle East. By the way, if, let's say, really gave cancer to people for doing what Jimmy Carter has done, well, then fuck that God. That God can blow me and play with these nuts, okay? Because that's not a God that's worthy of worship. You got peace between Israel and Egypt, and you actually care about getting peace moving forward to get a two-state solution. Fuck you. You deserve cancer. Really? There are other people who exist around the world who've done actual crimes and they don't care about peace who would deserve cancer first? Hey, God, what's up with that, man? So you give, let me get this straight, you know, you got war criminals. Al-Baghdadi is still walking around right now. No cancer. But Jimmy Carter, he deserves cancer. There are children with leukemia, children dying of cancer, children dying of all types of diseases. Extreme poverty exists in the world. The list goes on and on. God says, give all the good people some fucked up shit, and the bad people, Jimmy Carter gets cancer. George W. Bush is in his room right now painting pictures of Scooby-Doo. Where's the justice from that God? There is no justice from that God. That God is made up, and you're a hateful bigot for even pretending like God would give a guy like Jimmy Carter cancer. Okay. All right, now we go to the Vatican. I told you, man, I'm fucking up to my nose in religion today. The Washington Post has a great article out about the Pope, and it's titled Conservative Dissent Brewing Inside the Vatican. So as we all know, Pope Francis has been kind to gay people, or I should say he's just been more moderate on the issue than previous popes. And even to atheists, he said some things that weren't totally dickish. And recently, he even said abortion is a sin that could be forgiven. So this is rhetoric that we're not used to seeing from the Pope, we're not used to seeing out of the Vatican. And conservatives hate it. Oh my God, they hate it with such a burning passion. So So the Washington Post says the following, quote, on a sunny morning earlier this year, a camera crew entered a well-appointed apartment just outside the 9th century gates of Vatican City, pristinely dressed in the black robes and scarlet sash of the princes of the Roman Catholic Church. Wisconsin-born Cardinal Raymond Burke sat in his elaborately upholstered armchair and appeared to issue a warning to Pope Francis. They continue, a staunch conservative and Vatican bureaucrat, Burke had been demoted by the Pope a few months earlier, but it did not take the fight out of him. In front of the camera, Burke said he would resist liberal changes and seemed to caution Francis about the limits of his authority. He said, quote, one must be very attentive regarding the power of the Pope. Burke warned, it is not absolute. The Pope does not have the power to change teaching or doctrine. Wow. So that's weird. We have a Catholic who on the chain of command is below the Pope, and he's questioning the Pope, and he's lecturing the Pope about how to do your job and how to represent God's will. So I'm not sure that's advisable because, quote, primacy of the Roman bishop is largely derived from his role as the traditional successor to St. Peter, to whom Jesus gave the keys of heaven and the powers of binding and loosing, naming him as the rock upon which the church would be built. I'm talking about the Pope here. He has the supreme headship of the church on earth. He bears in virtue of the commission of Christ and with vicarial power derived from him, a vicarial power believed to have been conferred on St. Peter. Okay, so that sounds like a bunch of religious mumbo-jumbo, but basically what that means is the Pope is the anointed one. The Pope represents God. The Pope cannot be contradicted from people below him. So anybody who questions the Pope, not according to my belief system, not according to my doctrine, this isn't my argument, but anybody who questions the Pope and is in the Catholic Church, you are not a real Catholic. You are not a good Catholic. You are not abiding by the doctrine that you say you abide by and you say you believe in and you say is inerrant. So in other words, by snubbing your nose at the Pope, you're snubbing your nose at God. Why are you doing that? You better apologize. You better pray. You better say a few Hail Marys and an Our Father. What are you doing here, big guy? Oh, you disagree with the Pope and you're more conservative than the Pope? Well, www.stepasidebitch.com. You ain't the Pope, bitch. You know how this works? You want me to read back the rules to you again? He's speaking for your God, not according to my belief system, according to your belief system. So when you question him, when you stand up to him, that doesn't make sense. That's not possible, lest you not be a Catholic anymore, and instead of being demoted, you get your ass kicked out of the church. You want to play this game? Play this game, son. Play this game. It's not going to end well for you. It's not going to end well for you. Those rising popularity numbers of the Pope, because he's actually saying things that aren't drool on yourself stupid, like previous Pope said, get over it, man. And the funny thing is, in a weird way, we should be rooting for the dumb, crazy conservative guy. Why? Because with that guy, religion becomes more and more irrelevant. Because people look at that and they go, don't believe it. Take off your goofy-ass robes. Living in a really expensive place. Is that the message of Jesus? People look at you and they see a clown. And they go, no religion for me. Because look at what you do. Look at who you represent. Meanwhile, with Pope Francis, we're talking about somebody who's a good enough person where people go, you know what? Maybe I'll give this thing a shot. Maybe I'll give religion a second chance here. So in a weird way, it would make sense to vote for the other guy, but I'm not a dick, I'm not a bad person, and as of right now, religion exists, it's not going anywhere for a while. So with that being the case, I do prefer, and I would prefer, the moderates in all the different faiths to rise and lead the faiths. So good on Pope Francis. It's good that he's leading the Catholic Church. And I hope in other religions, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Scientology, whatever you name it, I hope that you have liberal, moderate, fairly secular people who are reasonable leading those faiths so that we can create a better world. Okay, next. I got two more stories. Let me do them real quick. I'm only going to get one in, I bet, but what are you going to do? Know what I'm saying, dog? What are you going to do? All right. The International Business Times is reporting that a Muslim flight attendant says she was suspended by ExpressJet for refusing to serve alcohol. So she's filing a discrimination complaint because she says that serving alcohol is against her religious beliefs. They say, quote, Cherie Stanley filed a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in an effort to get reinstated to her job. CARE, which is the Council of American Islamic Relations, in this branch here is in Michigan, released a statement following about this. What this case comes down to is no one should have to choose between their career and religion, and it's incumbent upon employers to provide a safe environment where employees can feel they can practice their religion freely. And then she said the following, quote, I don't think that I should have to choose between practicing my religion properly or earning a living. I shouldn't have to choose between one or the other because they're both important. Okay, so here's my response to this. Two words. Kim Davis. Now, I'm going to primarily address my comments here to the left. The right, they're always hypocrites, and they're going to be a hypocrite about this too. They're going to say, oh, fire her. Who cares? She's Muslim. But then they'll let the Christians have a pass and get by. So they're their own kind of hypocrite, and they're idiots. We all know that. We all acknowledge that. The left, by and large, they're more correct on the issues. It's clear from the show and what my opinions are on it. Everybody knows. But to the left here, don't fall into the trap where you think, oh, if a Muslim decides in the name of my religion I'm not going to abide by secular rules, that's okay. It's not okay. It's not. This is exactly like Kim Davis. What did Kim Davis do? Kim Davis said, because of my religion, I refuse to marry gay people because that's not in line with my religion. And if you disagree with me, you're a bigot. That's what Kim Davis said. Oh, because of my religion, I cannot serve alcohol. And if you disagree with me, you're a bigot, you're a bad person, and I'm suing you. No. That's not the way this game is played. We don't have a system of religious anarchy where you get to claim religion for anything and then hide behind it and say, I get to get away with it and rules don't apply to me because I'm religious. That doesn't make any sense. That's ridiculous. So I'll give you one more example here, and then hopefully you'll see the absurdity of the idea that, you know, you can get away with not doing your job because you're religious. In 2014, we covered a story. It was a Christian who refused to serve any non-white people because he's a racist, and it was based on his religion. Now, understand, there are parts of the Bible that are crystal clear. They're against interracial marriage, interreligious marriage, marriage between tribes. There's slavery in the fucking Bible. Yes, you can, a reasonable person can see the message in the Bible of racism. You can see it. That's what this person did. Not saying this person's reasonable. Of course they're not. They believe the fucking Bible. But they said, because of my religion, I do not like other races, so I'm not going to serve other people. To let that person go and say, hey, it's their religion. You can't be a bigot. You can't disagree with it. It's the same principle at work if you say to this woman, yeah, not serve the alcohol because it's a religion. What are you going to do? You want to be a bigot? You want to be an Islamophobe? No. That doesn't make you a bigot. That doesn't make you an Islamophobe. It makes you somebody who realizes that we can't have theocratic anarchy in the country where anybody for any reason whatsoever, whether it's in the doctrine or not, says, hey, I don't want to do X, Y, or Z because religion. That's not a reason. You know it's not a good reason, and that should be the end of the conversation to reasonable people, because laws are there insofar as they make sense and insofar as all of society has to follow them. You can't just pick and choose, and you can't just pick and choose based on desert holy books, which are not proven and are not true. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Everybody have a good one. Peace.